The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters. It is 10 a.m. here in London. I'm Frank Holland, and here is your 5 at 5. Shaky ground, the S&P looking to rebound off its first four-session losing streak of the year, as yet another Fed official signals caution on cutting interest rates too soon. A sector under pressure, chip stocks, they're breathing a sigh of relief today. As shares of Micron and Taiwan Semi, they get a pre-market boost. We're going to tell you why in just a moment. China firing back a new proposed tariffs on steel and aluminum imports to the U.S. We are live in Beijing with the response. Plus, getting set for the first FANG report as Netflix opens its books after the close today. A new scrutiny for Boeing after fiery testimony yesterday from the 787 Dreamliner whistleblower. It is Thursday, April the 18th, 2024, and you are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. We're coming to you live from CNBC London. Thank you so much for being here with us. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. As always, we kick off the hour with a check of U.S. stock futures, with the S&P 500 rising a four-session losing streak, its longest since the start of the new year. Taking a look at futures, you can see they're in the green across the board. Looks like the Dow would open up about 30 points higher than NASDAQ, showing the most promise in the pre-market. But remember, we started in the green yesterday before closing lower. This morning, we're also watching tech and the NASDAQ very closely, also down for four straight sessions and on pace for its longest weekly losing streak since late 2022. That may change this morning, however, as we get set for the kickoff to big tech earnings and Netflix after the close today. The number one thing you want to watch and the key investor expectations, those are coming up later in the hour. We're also checking the bond market right now, taking a look at yields. We've seen elevated yields. Right now, the two-year yield is higher than the 10, the 20, and the 30. Taking a look, the two-year coming in at 4.92, just easing off a 5% yield that we saw it briefly touch. The benchmark right now at 4.57. We're also looking at energy, specifically oil, coming off its worst day since late March. Taking a look right now, we're seeing the action, the oil market continue to be on the downside. Right now, Brent crude, the U.S. benchmark, trading just above 82 bucks a barrel. It's down 0.75%. Brent crude, that's the international benchmark, trading at about 86.65 a barrel, also down 0.75%. And we've got to look at cryptocurrency as well. Bitcoin rebounding after briefly falling below $60,000 for the first time since early March. Right now, Bitcoin trading at about 61,430 or so, up just over a 0.5%. But remember, big gains year to date, up 44% for the year. We're also just days away. We believe we're days away from the so-called halving that expects to have a big impact on the cryptocurrency market. OK, that's your setup. Let's now see how Europe is shaping up as this trading day gets underway. Sylvia Amaro right here with me in our London newsroom with another rebound when it comes to Europe.
Definitely a stronger rebound today when it comes to European stocks. You can see to my right that all of the major bourses are trading in the green this morning. And this is after the Stoxx 600, the benchmark in Europe, made marginal gains on Wednesday. But perhaps more importantly, at the end of yesterday's session, the Stoxx 600 was on track to end the week down by about 1.3%. So one of the question marks at this stage is whether today is going to change that narrative, that weak performance. We'll get a check on that tomorrow. Now, the two dynamics that are playing in the markets at this stage is mostly what we're hearing from ECB officials regarding that potential first rate cut, and then on the other hand, what corporates are telling us as well. With that in mind, I want to take you to the sector breakdown just to really highlight to you some of the company dynamics we're getting in Europe at this stage. You can see that at the top, the outperformer in terms of sectors is utilities, up by about 0.8%, 0.9%, I should say. So, investors choosing a little bit more of that part of the defensive sectors at this stage. We have banks up by about 0.8%. Industrials also moving higher at this stage. And one of the dynamics there, Frank, is the ABB results that came in higher than expected. Just a final point to say that oil and gas are the worst performers, down by about 0.9%. A lot to do with the changes in oil prices there. Let's see how those oil prices will continue to move amid these geopolitical tensions in the Middle East.
You know, Silvio, on Street Signs here in Europe, you and I were talking about those ABB results, also a strong IPO showing in Paris. So a lot of things giving a boost to the markets over here in Europe. Silvio Amaro, thank you very much. All right, turning our attention back over to the United States. Equities, they're kind of struggling to find their footing. As the prospect of higher for longer, that becomes a reality. Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester, just the latest central bank official to push out rate cut expectations for this year. She says more data is needed.
It's getting from, 7 to 9% inflation down to 2%. It's not going to be smooth, but we want to be able to be pretty confident that it's on this downward trajectory to 2%. And I think that's something where we're going to just need to see more data, more experience to be able to be assured that that's true.
Mester, a voting member of the FOMC, adds there's no need to cut interest rates right now with the current policy in a good place, in her opinion. Increased uncertainty around rates adding fresh pressure to stocks as the VIX comes off its highest level since Halloween. Options tied to the VIX also seeing their highest trading volume in more than 6 years, showing that more traders believe that volatility will persist. Let's discuss how to position from here with Nicole Inouye, head of U.S. and Latin American Equity Strategy at HSBC. Nicole, good morning. It's great to have you on the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
All right. So you put out a note not too long ago with your S&P price targets. You had a base case of 5,400, a Goldilocks case of 5,700. Give me a sense. We've seen a lot of things kind of come up when it comes from central bank heads, including Jay Powell, speaking about what's going to go forward. Hey, are you changing your S&P outlook at all with this new idea that we're going to see the cuts pushed out further? And are you changing your view of how many cuts this year?
No, for now, we keep our call of 3 rate cuts for 2024, 3 for 2025. Obviously, this is data dependent. We'll get the core PCE out next week. We're expecting 0.3% month over month growth. Obviously, if this comes in a little bit ahead of expectations, we need to rethink the rate cuts for this year. But, looking at our S&P targets, our base and our bull case scenario, we're keeping those targets. We've always had the view that it's not important when the Fed cuts, but if the Fed cuts. So Fed rate cuts are still on the table. The market has become much more hawkish, only expecting about 40 basis points of cuts this year. But we're still on this path to cut. So we think even if the Fed kicks the can down the road a little bit further, maybe we don't get in June, maybe July, maybe not September. We think what's important for equity markets is that we still have the narrative that rate cuts are debt coming down the road. And so we're keeping our base case at S&P's target of 5,400 and under bull case 5,700.
All right, let's go with your base case. Still pretty bullish from where we are right now. Right now trading at about 50.22. So with so much pressure on mega cap tech that seemed to power the rally in the beginning of the year, where do you go now? I mean, where would you suggest that people put their money? Is now the time to go into cyclicals? Is now the time to go into, less rate sensitive sectors like healthcare? I mean, give us a sense of what's a safe bet right now and what traders are increasingly believing is going to be a very volatile environment.
Yeah, so, I think if you look at big tech, we're still positive that sector. This is a sector that really doesn't matter if we have rate cuts. It's not as important in terms of GDP growth. This is a secular growth story fueled by AI. So I think big tech continues to perform well. They're delivering on their earnings. Okay. This is a sector that has very high ROEs, very high profit margins. So even if we shift to this narrative of higher rates for longer, we think this sector continues to perform well. Remember, a lot of these companies are net cash. Okay. So even with rates at these high levels, they will still perform well. And we don't see that balance sheet risk for this sector.
One other sector you seem to be interested in is real estate, but specifically REITs. You gave us a list of stocks that have seen EPS revisions to the upside. A lot of them are REITs, names like Equinix, a company we've had here on the show. Also, Realty Income. On their website, they literally say we're the monthly dividend company. So right now, are you bullish on REITs because of the dividends, or is there some other reason?
No, you know, on real estate, we're not bullish on real estate at this point. I think looking at the sectors, different sectors besides big tech that we do like is consumer discretionary. So I think looking into 2024, even if we get this narrative of higher rates for longer, we think the consumer stays pretty resilient. And we look at the consumer, we look at kind of a barbell approach. So we think the high-end consumer continues to do well. This is because of this wealth effect that's been created by higher home prices, higher equity prices. So those companies that are really focused more on the high-end consumer will perform well. And even those focused on the low-end consumer, we think will perform well. Also because you'll probably have the middle-income consumer trading down to those lower-income products.
Okay. All right, Nicole Inouye, great to see you. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time. All right, time now for a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Our Silvana Hanau, she's back at CNBC headquarters with those. Silvana, good morning.
Hey, Frank, good morning to you. Let's get you some headlines. Apple CEO Tim Cook will reportedly meet with Singapore's leaders as he wraps up his extensive Southeast Asia tour today and tomorrow as he searches for new growth markets and manufacturing sites to offset headwinds in China. Now, as part of his trip to Singapore, Apple says it plans to invest more than $250 million to expand its regional campus in that country when it first set up back in 2022. Elon Musk is apologizing for issuing laid-off employees what he calls, quote, incorrectly low severance packages, according to an internal Tesla email reviewed by CNBC. Now, Musk said the erroneous severance packages would be corrected immediately. Tesla said earlier this week that it would be cutting more than 10% of its global workforce, which totaled around 140,000 people at the end of 2023. And the U.S. Department of Transportation is reportedly looking into the FAA's oversight of Boeing's 737 and 787 manufacturing practices. Speaking with Semaphore, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg told reporters when something is in the news, his agency is going to take a closer look the same way it's taking a closer look at Boeing. This comes after fiery testimony on Capitol Hill yesterday from a Boeing whistleblower that his former company, quote, absolutely has a culture of retaliation against employees who raise safety concerns, Frank.
Yeah, those concerns really weighed on the stock, looking at Boeing shares down more than 35% year to date. Silvana, thank you very much.
Yeah.
We're going to stick with Boeing. We got a market flash for you. Some news out this morning. Speaking to Reuters, Alaska Air CFO saying his company has deployed more inspectors at Boeing's facilities following the MAX 9 grounding, adding that Alaska does expect further delays in Boeing's 737 MAX 10 program. Taking a look at shares of Boeing right now, as Silvana mentioned, down just about 1%. Our Phil LeBeau will have much more with Alaska's CEO coming up at 1 p.m. Eastern. All right, we have a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, shares of Micron, they're popping in a very big way ahead of the open. Our Arjun Kapal joins me right here on set, coming up with the reason why. Plus, sticking with chips and the world's largest semiconductor maker, topping expectations for its most recent quarter. But will the rising tide lift all boats? And then later, Goldman Sachs warning that pension funds could be dealt a blow to the staying power of Wall Street's recent run-up. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. We have a market flash for you. Shares of Micron, they're surging in the pre-market on a report. It could be the next beneficiary of the Biden administration's CHIPS Act. Our Arjun Kapal joins me right here on set in London with much more. Arjun, seeing shares up just about 2.5% right now.
Yeah, we've got a report out of Bloomberg suggesting Micron will be awarded $6.1 billion in grants as part of the CHIPS and Science Act that is slated for next week, where President Biden is reportedly going to travel to Syracuse, New York on April 25th, near where Micron is building some factories there to make this announcement. Now, Micron shares higher. Clearly, this is a big deal for the company. It's a third place memory chip maker versus Samsung and SK Hynix. So probably a little bit of hopes here that actually this could benefit Micron in terms of expanding capacity, in terms of new customers and helping it compete with those two South Korean giants as well. But the broader story here is this continued reshoring efforts from the U.S. to bring chip manufacturing back to U.S. shores. COVID really was a wake-up call, I think, for the U.S. government, realizing that a lot of the manufacturing center is out in Asia, in Taiwan, in South Korea as well. And the U.S. sees this as a national security play, requiring those chips to be made in the U.S., on U.S. soil, so there's never any supply chain issues if there's any shocks again, like a pandemic or anything else. And, of course, we've seen a number of other awards. Intel, right. Samsung, TSMC have all received awards under the CHIPS and Science Act, and this is all part of that broader effort with Micron now, the latest.
Important note, Micron moving higher on a report. We haven't gotten confirmation just yet. But I want to ask you about the broader chip sector. Seeing this move to the upside from Micron on this CHIPS Act news for investors, is it kind of a sigh of relief? I mean, we saw NVIDIA yesterday drop 4%.
Yeah, NVIDIA was sitting in correction territory. You had the Philadelphia Chip Index as well, which is a basket of stocks in the sector, also in correction territory. But I think that in part has been driven by the results we got out of ASML yesterday, which were not very good. Right. There was weakness in terms of demand for their machinery. However, I think today the narrative slightly starting to shift. We had earnings out of TSMC, the company reporting their first growth in profit and revenue after three straight quarters of decline. So there's green shoots here in terms of the recovery. These chip sector work in cycles, and it appears now we're starting perhaps to see early signs of a bottom in terms of that recovery. And of course, now TSMC reaping the benefits of not only a slight recovery in the broader sector, but also very much driven by that continued demand for those AI chips we've been talking about all year.
You know, when you look at the surge when it comes to chip stocks, you saying they're at the bottom right now. It's just amazing. So imagine the upside. Arjun, you actually led me to our next topic, Taiwan Semi. We're going to shift over to that. Arjun, thank you very much. Taiwan Semi, growing profit for the first time in a year and posting its fastest sales increase since 2022. TSMC, which counts NVIDIA, AMD, and Apple, as some of its largest customers, says the boom in AI is boosting demand and now expects revenue to rise by as much as 30% this quarter. Joining me now to discuss is Matt Bryson, Senior Research Vice President at Wedbush. Matt, good morning. Good to see you.
Great to see you.
All right, so put this report in perspective for us. You know, the gains here, mostly boosted by AI. In your mind, how sustainable is that for this company? How real is this AI demand going forward?
Yeah, so I mean, for TSM, they are the supplier to all of the major participants on the AI semiconductor side of things, right? So Intel's really the only company that's fabbing its own chips. NVIDIA, obviously the leader, is using TSM, but then AMD, Marvell, Broadcom, they are all TSM customers. And so as AI grows, TSM is a key beneficiary. And, you know, basically what they said on the call is we see a whole lot more revenue from AI content than standard server content because all of those AI semiconductor makers are our customers.
All right, so we're looking at the shares again. Taiwan Semi up just about 1% right now. So we're going to get a little bit in the weeds here. The company really focuses on 3-nanometer chips, but it plans to start production of 2-nanometer chips that are supposed to be even more high-powered in 2025. How does that shape your outlook for this company? Of course, you've already seen it run up about 35% year-to-date.
Yeah, so they are the leader in 5 and 4-nanometer. Now they're the leader in 3-nanometer. It looks very much like they'll be the leader in 2-nanometer. I just don't see any real threat to TSM on the advanced semiconductor side until potentially Intel comes out with 14A, which they've said is going to be mass production in 2028. For TSM, that gives them a monopoly. That's boosted their margins. And what they've said with 2-nanometer is that they think they'll get a little bit better pricing, a little bit better margin versus what they've seen with 3.
Yeah, TSMC also expected to be the beneficiary of some CHIPS Act funding as well. Matt Bryson, good to see you. Thank you very much. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, raising concerns around a key security program set to expire in roughly 24 hours. Why some lawmakers are hesitant to sign off, and the sector set to be impacted if they do.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Turning our attention now to Capitol Hill and a critical national security program that is set to expire tomorrow. As lawmakers race to extend the measure, it's facing some resistance from some over concerns around the scope of the bill and the companies that could be potentially impacted by it. Our Emily Wilkins joins us now with much more from Washington, D.C. Emily, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. Well, yeah, this key national security program, it's helped prevent terrorist attacks, trafficking, other major security issues, and it's going to expire on Friday at midnight if Congress does not act. Now, the Senate is planning a vote today on updating the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, and this allows intelligence agencies to collect information from communication providers on foreigners who might pose a threat to U.S. safety. Now, the Senate Intelligence Committee Chair Mark Warner said any lapse in the program would be detrimental to national security.
As we simultaneously try to debate aid for Ukraine and Israel and humanitarian relief to the Palestinians in Gaza, the idea that we would suddenly go dark at this moment in time would be the height of irresponsibility.
The House passed an updated FISA measure last week, but an amendment that was added at the last minute is now leading to concerns from a coalition of both Republicans and Democrats who say that the program is now too broad. Supporters say the amendment is simply updating language that is more than a decade old and hasn't kept up with technology. But Democratic Senator Ron Wyden said it could lead to employees that have nothing to do with communications data companies being required to collect and pass along information to the government.
There are countless others who could be forced to help the government spy, including those who clean offices and guard buildings. If this provision is enacted, the government can deputize any of these people against their will and force them, in effect, to become what amounts to an agent for Big Brother.
Concerns about FISA aren't completely unwarranted. A congressional investigation found the FBI did abuse the program to spy on Americans. But Warner said the FBI has since fixed these issues, and now Congress just needs to codify the changes to make sure best practices are in place going forward. Frank?
Yeah, very important piece of legislation there. Emily Wilkins live in D.C. Emily, thank you. As we had a break, we're watching shares of Alphabet this morning. We got some new controversy after it terminated 28 employees yesterday following a series of protests against labor conditions and the company's military contract with the Israeli government. In a statement to CNBC, Google says it supports numerous governments around the world and countries where it operates, including the Israeli government, adding, This work is not directed at highly sensitive, classified, or military workloads relevant to weapons or intelligence services. Taking a look at shares of Alphabet, they're fractionally higher right now. But again, Alphabet firing 28 employees over some issues over a protest there at the company. We're going to leave it there. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this break. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Holland coming to you from CNBC London. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We pick up a half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures with the S&P and the Nasdaq coming off four straight down days. That's the longest losing streak for the S&P since the start of this year. So take a look at futures right now. Important to note, we just saw the Dow futures just move to the negative, just fractionally, as you can see, just a short time ago. The Nasdaq still in the positive. The S&P essentially flat, just a bit higher right now in the pre-market. We also want to look at a number of the names that are moving in the pre-market. We're going to start off with Equifax selling off after warning of more weakness in mortgage demand. The company, which rates the credit quality of borrowers for lenders, expects an 11% decline in mortgage credit inquiries this year. Equifax is what I meant to say. You can see shares are down about 9.5%. They also add the non-mortgage businesses contributed to 80% of total revenue during Q1 as it focuses more on AI and the cloud. Las Vegas Sands is also lower despite beating earnings expectations. Sales growing by 40%, revenue hitting nearly $3 billion compared to the estimate of $20 million. The casino operator also brought back $450 million worth of shares on top of its current 20-cent dividend. And shares of Duolingo, they're popping. The move coming as it prepares to join the S&P MidCap 400, replacing Cable One. That starts on Monday. Duolingo is now up almost 50% in the last year and is hovering very close to its 50-day moving average. Those shares up just about 6.5%. All right, turn our attention back to the broader markets and the new cause for concern when it comes to the staying power of the stock market's historic run to records. Now, according to a new report from Goldman Sachs, some of the biggest players in the market, we're talking pension funds, they're set to unload about $325 billion in stocks this year compared to $191 billion in 2023. This, as corporate funds and government agencies alike, they look to cash out after locking in impressive returns in recent years and look to the relative safety as of late of competitive returns of fixed income. Joining me right now, right here on set in London with much, much more is Gurpreet Gharrywal, Goldman Sachs Asset Management Vice President of Fixed Income and Liquidity Solutions. I got to turn a little bit. You're right here. It's great to have you here. We've had you on the show many times. Talk to me about this. What are you seeing and what are you hearing in the fixed income market? Are you seeing more demand for bonds across the board, or is it more on the short end where you're seeing higher yields or the long end to try to lock in these elevated yields?
Hi, Francois. It's great to be with you in person. And you make a good point there, which is fixed income is opportunistic. It once again offers attractive yield. And so you see demand for core fixed income, investors who'd previously rotated into equities and other risk assets now rotating back into core fixed income, so core government bonds, corporate bonds. And we recently had an insurance survey where we noted that many insurers are also looking to add to their fixed income allocations. Another part of the market that's particularly opportunistic and interesting is corporate bonds. High quality credit offers attractive income, but there's also total return potential under the hood if you apply active bond selection.
All right, so we've seen a big move in bond yields recently. When it comes to a portfolio right now, is it still a 60-40 portfolio environment, or right now are bonds becoming more attractive? Should they be a bigger part of a portfolio?
The big picture, we think that investors should move to a more balanced portfolio allocation, and bonds have a bigger role to play. Yield is back, so you get attractive income when times are good, and also bonds yields are higher, which means that when you do encounter a downside growth risk or downside growth volatility, then bonds can also buffer and protect portfolios. And so the role that fixed income should be playing is once again being restored. So we do believe investors should strengthen their bond with bonds.
All right. So you usually come on and talk about bonds, but today you also want to talk a little bit about currency. So you're very bullish on the U.S. dollar, but you're also bullish on the Mexican peso. And I want to ask you why. It's pretty much flat year to date. Why are you so excited about the Mexican peso?
Look, we have currency exposures. We have a broad, diversified exposure to a set of currencies. There's different idiosyncratic factors that play a part. You know, one of the things that we do when we're navigating through the noise, which is the title of our second quarter fixed income outlook, is to focus on fundamentals, utilize quantitative analysis, but also adopt a long-term view, to think about long-term perspectives and themes. And so beyond some of the cyclical macro fundamentals that may support the peso, another structural long-term theme is to think that the currency in the country and its economy will benefit from reshoring and sort of reorientation of global supply chains.
Okay. We had you on the show a couple months ago in the beginning of the year, and like many people, you saw, you know, 6 rate cuts possibly this year. Have you changed your outlook with all the Fed talking that we've had going on, specifically Jay Powell talking just a few days ago?
Yeah, look, like the central banks, we are data dependent. Our analysis is rooted in what the data is telling us. We do think the strength that you've seen in U.S. inflation so far this year suggests that the timeline may be pushed back and the pace of rate cuts may be slower. But I think importantly for investors, it's important to keep in mind that the next move does look like it would be lower Also importantly, the delay is occurring against the backdrop of still solid growth. So that presents two investment implications. First, we think rate volatility has come lower.
Okay.
That supports agency mortgage-backed securities. Second, if you're having this delay against the strong growth backdrop, it's still an opportunistic environment to be lending to high-quality companies. Okay. So coming back to my point about credit.
But you're giving us a lot of narrative. How many cuts?
Look, we think there's scope for three if the Fed is able to deliver a cut in July. We have a couple of CPI prints before then, more labor market reports. But big picture, the direction of travel does look like it's lower.
Capri Grewal, great to have you here. Thank you very much for coming to the set.
Great to be here.
All right, we're going to turn our attention now to a developing story and an update to one we brought you first right here on Worldwide Exchange yesterday. Beijing this morning responding to the Biden administration's new proposal to triple import tariffs on Chinese-made steel and aluminum and investigate other anti-competitive trade practices. Our Eunice Yun joins me now with much more on this story. Eunice.
Thanks so much, Frank. Well, China called President Biden's proposal for tariff hikes a mistake for steel and aluminum and said that the USTR Section 301 investigation, which would be looking into China's alleged unfair practices in to ports, logistics, as well as shipbuilding, a, quote, mistake on top of a mistake. Now, this comes after a rally in the steel town of Pittsburgh, where President Biden had called on his trade chief to look into higher tariffs on the Chinese metals as much as 25% from 7.5% today. Now, the Biden administration is also looking into stopping the indirect importation of these metals through Mexico. His trade chief had told Congress that these investigations were needed because of China's, what she described, anti-competitive policies, including, she said, enormous amounts of state support. And so from an investor standpoint, it looks as though we could be heading into a period of greater conflict between the U.S. and China because the U.S. trade measures, Frank, touch upon another issue that Secretary Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, had said during her trip here, which is excess capacity. And the Chinese don't look as though they're changing their methods at this point, relying so much more on manufacturing as opposed to consumption here for now.
So, Eunice, obviously Chinese leaders upset about these tariffs, pushing back on the idea of them. But longer term, is there a sense that possibly that China might retaliate against any U.S. imports in response to this?
Well, it's always up in the air. I mean, the Chinese have said that they were going to defend their rights. A little bit squishy, though, on exactly what that means. So we're just going to have to wait and see whether or not the Chinese would retaliate. But it really puts Chinese in a difficult position because if they retaliate, they're going to be undermining a big effort that's been made here, which is to try to get more foreign investors into this country.
Yeah, you know, the German chancellor there just a few days ago talking about fair competition. I think that's an issue with the U.S. as well. Our Eunice Yun live in Beijing. Good to see you as always. All right, coming up, getting ready for Netflix results. We lay out the key metrics to watch and why one investor says he's just holding off on adding more to his position. We are back on Worldwide Exchange right after this break. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. We get just a taste of big tech earnings today when Netflix reports its results after the close. You see the streamer shares up just about 0.5% right now. And it's looking to keep up momentum from recent quarters thanks to a big boost in subscribers and a password crackdown. Our Steve Kovac joins us now with what to watch in those results. And Steve, I'm going to need you to email me your password so I can get back on.
Absolutely not, Frank. But look, Netflix, as you said, it's been on a tear. And it's coming off a quarter where it smashed expectations for new subscribers and revenue growth. And like you said, the big reason for that is cracking down on password sharing. In addition to that, there's that cheaper ad-supported plan. Now, shares are up 26% this year on all that growth. The question for this quarter, is that momentum going to continue, or was this just a brief spike in growth from all that password sharing cracking down? Street's expecting a little over 4.5 million new subscribers. That would be more than double what they gained in the year-ago quarter. Revenue should be up 13%, according to Wall Street expectations. expectations. What we don't know as much about, though, is the advertising and gaming businesses at Netflix. It's unclear, for example, if the cost of licensing and making all those mobile games keep the Netflix subscription sticky enough to keep people on the service. For advertising, the company has said it has more than 23 million subscribers for its plan with ads, but it's unclear how much revenue those ads are bringing in. And on the content side, we're seeing a lot more experimentation, such as live events, including a major one coming up, but that boxing match between Jake Paul and Mike Tyson this summer. Still, no traditional live professional sports beyond documentaries, Frank.
All right, so that's interesting. And this fight, it's kind of like a social media phenomenon. I'm watching those videos of Mike Tyson. I'm getting a little nervous for Jake Paul. It looks a little scary. Yeah, but on a serious note, how big of a part? He's like 60, me either. For Netflix, though, on a very serious note, live events, how big of a part is that of their strategy going forward? Is that something that they're expecting to expand in? And I guess this is kind of tangentially sports, is technically sports. We're going to see more live sports?
Yeah, mostly what Netflix has said about sports is they're interested in like the documentaries, and you know that F1 documentary is the best example of that. And then these kind of gimmicky live sports events is kind of what they've been experimenting with. They've also experimented with that live event, that Chris Rock special, the stand-up comedy special, for example. But yeah, it's mostly an experimentation phase to see if they can really make it work. You know, we only see a handful of these events each year, Frank.
Yeah, cloud gaming is also something I know they're trying to expand in. They're getting, an Assassin's Creed title and a Tomb Raider title. Yeah. So that might be exciting. Steve Kovac, live at the NASDAQ. Great to see you as always. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank.
For more on expectations around Netflix's results, let's bring in George Tse, founder and chairman of Annandale Capital. He's also a shareholder of Netflix. George, good morning. Great to see you.
Thanks, Frank. Great to be here. I sure wouldn't want to fight Mike Tyson. I don't care if he's 57, 67, or 47. Forget it.
George, I'm with you. Let's get down to business, though. Let's talk about Netflix a little bit. I know you're not an analyst, but I'm looking with the analyst estimates. Analysts only see about a 3% upside for this stock going forward. What are you expecting?
Well, I wish I had a crystal ball, and I think those analysts all wish they did, too, because they really don't have any idea where this stock is going. It's a relative multiple game now. There's a lot of advocates for Netflix out there who think it should be in the great eight. It should not be the Magnificent Seven, but the great eight, and that Netflix unfairly got banished from FANG and not into the Magnificent Seven. It should be one of these eight great stocks out there, or at least replace Tesla, because it's just performing so well and it's off the charts. But they've got the same problem that you indicated earlier about institutional investors pulling money out of the market. Has it come too far too fast? I mean, it's basically tripled in about 2.5 years, and that's an amazing move. And we're okay. Short the calls on the stock, cover calls to protect it. It's out of money. We don't want to lose the stock, but we've been trying to clip a few coupons in the meantime. So they've got high expectations they got to meet to keep their momentum going.
So put this in perspective for me. I was here in Europe. I was talking to an analyst about this. So the estimate for new paid subs is about 4.5 million. Huge increase year over year. Steve Kovac highlighted that. But it's a big decline quarter to quarter. It's about a 65% decline quarter to quarter. What's the benchmark when it comes to new subscriber ads? I mean, the password crackdown, the tailwind from that has to slow down sooner or later. How would you view it if they met the estimate? I mean, I don't even know how to look at this.
Oh, the stock gets cracked if they meet the quote-unquote estimate. The whisper number is much higher than that. It's more like 7, 8 million subscribers. They probably have to do 9 to 10 for the stock to get a big boost. So it's kind of gaming the system a little bit. They got to do far better than that to keep the momentum up. I mean, they're up 26 this year, and the market's starting to fade. So they better hit it out of the park.
All right, so what's next? Steve Kovac just highlighted Mike Tyson, Jake Paul, terrifying, would never get in the ring with Mike Tyson. Mike, if you're watching, let's be friends. Serious note, what's next for, I know we love you. What's next for this company? I mean, they do have Bridgerton coming back. That's important. Squid Game's coming back. But what keeps not only the people who are subscribed on the platform, but gets new subscribers in your mind? What do they need to do?
I think it's just a numbers game. I think that eventually you run out of room, and they're going to eventually have an Apple problem where the stock is at such a high multiple and there's not so much additional additive growth and new subscribers to get. And then you start saying, okay, what multiple do you pay for this? Is it a Procter & Gamble? Is it a PepsiCo? Is it one of these kind of stocks that should have a 10, 20, 30% premium to the market multiple? But how much is that? So you get into a lot more nuanced analysis of a company like this. I think this is a must-own for people if they want a diversified stock portfolio. But do you buy it right here? Probably not. You probably wait for better days and softer prices, because we're probably going to get them at some point this year.
All right, we're going to leave the conversation there. Netflix shares up almost a half a percent ahead of earnings. George C., great to see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, we have the one word that every investor needs to know today, plus why our Jim Cramer says the recent pain for the markets, it just may not be over just yet. Also, join the first ever CNBC Changemakers event in New York City today. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, WNBA Commissioner Kathy Engelbert, and many others will share how they're reshaping business and redefining leadership. Scan the QR code to learn more. Visit cnbcevents.com/changemakers. And we will be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It's time now for your WEX wrap-up. We start with TSMC growing profit for the first time in a year and posting its fastest sales increase since 2022. The chipmaker says it's benefiting from strong AI demand from customers like NVIDIA, Apple, and AMD. And important to note, shares were higher earlier in the pre-market, now down about 1.5%. House Republicans adding their revised TikTok ban to a foreign aid bill for Ukraine and Israel. A standalone TikTok ban is currently with the Senate after the House approved that measure last month. Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester says she's not in a hurry to cut interest rates with the current policy in which she says is a good place. She says she still expects inflation to fall further, but needs to be more confident in the Fed's 2% target. The Transportation Department is reportedly looking into the FAA's oversight of Boeing's 737 and 787 manufacturing practices. This after a Boeing whistleblower said the company has a culture of retaliation against employees who raise safety concerns. Shares of Boeing down more than 1%. Shares of Micron, they're higher on reports it will receive $6 billion in chip grants next week. Bloomberg says Micron will also accept loans as part of the package, though the total value remains unclear. Shares of Micron up 1.75%. And Apple CEO Tim Cook will reportedly meet with Singapore's leader as he wraps up his extensive Southeast Asia tour this week. Apple says it plans to invest more than $250 million to expand its regional campus in Singapore. All right, stocks, they're working to get back some momentum as the recent wave of turbulence continues. But our Jim Cramer says the pullback, it may not be done just yet.
Usually you get a day when the market starts down, not up like it did today. Down big. Therefore, it gives you a chance to get in after the washout. You get a whoosh. You get a crescendo of selling. An upstart like we had today is a nightmare. You need to wash out all these people before you can bottom. And we're not near that yet.
All right. For much more, let's bring in Lindsay Bell, chief strategist at 248 Ventures and a CNBC contributor. Lindsay, it's great to see you. Good morning.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
So I agree with Jim Cramer's take that it's time to kind of wash out those sellers and we need to see, you know, a near term bottom for the stocks to move up higher.
Well, I think if you look at the move that we've seen so far, stocks are down over 4% since the end of March high. The average pullback in any given year is about 14%. And we usually have at least one 10 percentage point correction in any given year as well. So, yeah, I do think we're prepared for a greater move lower. But again, it doesn't have to be the end of the world. This is natural. It's a natural part of investing, and it's kind of the price that you pay.
All right. So you're saying it's a natural part of investing. I know something you're looking at is the move higher in interest rates. We're going to show the audience a chart, just the divergence. We see the 10-year move higher, S&P just move lower. Is that something that you see continuing? I mean, is that just going to continue to put pressure on the market? Because we've had rates higher before and somehow, some way, stocks powered higher.
Yeah, I know. The divergence is a new thing for 2024. What we had seen is the, like your chart is probably showing, is that stocks and bonds were moving in the same direction for quite a while. I think it's that 4.5% rate, if you look at that chart, shows you that the market gets a little uncomfortable when we move that to beyond that level. Not to mention that the pace of which we've moved up in the 10-year over the last several days, last week, has been pretty quick. Now, today, it seems like the 10-year is kind of calming down here, but it's something that we're going to definitely keep an eye on. Interest rates, inflation, the Fed moves, we're going to get a ton of Fed speak today, as you know. That's going to all play an important role, and it seems like investors are becoming more knee-jerky to that commentary and more reactionary. Okay. So we're definitely going to expect that to continue.
So, Lindsay, I think the bottom line question is, with so much volatility expected, where do you go right now? I know you're looking at energy and also industrials. Are you also looking more closely at short-term bonds with these elevated yields?
Yeah, no, I think again, once yields get to this rate and start approaching 5%, people really start thinking about their asset allocation. And we know people flock to money market funds over the course of the last year or two, given the better rates that we've seen in the market. Okay. And I do think that people that came out could potentially move back in.
All right. I want to get your WEX word of the day. We're going to give you the last word here. How do you see today shaping up? What's that word?
I'm putting the word focus. The market has really, their focus has whipsawed between the Fed and interest rates and inflation and fundamentals. And we're in the middle of earnings season, so I'm looking forward to the market starting to focus on the fundamentals as we get further down into earnings season.
All right, Lindsay Bell, it is always great to see you. One more quick look at the futures right now. We're seeing the Dow actually futures move back into positive territory. The Nasdaq, the best performer in the futures market, at least right now. The S&P just fractionally higher right now. That's going to do it for us. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.